Welcome to We Mentor Mondays podcast with Nancy. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery. Learn something new from our stories today. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy. In the studio today, I have Ken Suzanne. He's here for a second mentoring session. In the first mentoring session, he was checking in and feeling very receptive and happy and energized and aware and challenged. And we talked a little bit about parenting because he's a father of two. He's married to Kelly here in Minneapolis. He also, just to give you a recap, Ken Suzanne is of counsel in Barnes and Thornburg Law Practice in Minneapolis, and he's a member of the firm's intellectual property department. Ken has experience in the areas of trademark law, copyright law, internet law, social media law, domain names, and surface mark matters. He has counseled his clients on a variety of issues ranging from the inception of a trademark to ultimate registration, licensing, and enforcement. Ken counsels and assists wearable technology companies to protect brand names through trademark, copyright, and domain name filings. He also performs trademark clearance searches for mobile application names and logos. So Ken has also worked with an expansive network of associates worldwide on trademark clearance, licensing, and litigation matters. He also shared with us about his IP Fridays podcast program. He has a partner. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Nancy.
Rolf Claussen?
Rolf Claussen, yes.
Claussen, mm-hmm. From Germany.
Yeah, that's right, Cologne, Germany.
Yes. Yeah, and you both practice international law.
In intellectual property law,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, on an international scale.
Yeah.
Because as we were talking about earlier, trademarks are territorial, okay, and that you might be developing a brand here in the United States. You might have plans to then expand it in Europe and Asia, and you have to think about protecting your brand in those places. You might have secured a trademark in the United States, but that doesn't give you registry protection per se in Asia and in the European Union. Every country has its own system,
mm-hmm.
and you have to think about your budget, how much money you have to safeguard your IP. What makes sense to protect? Where should you protect it? When should you protect it? And these are the types of things that, you know, I go over with my clients when we decide, you know, where we're going to file, what we're going to do, and what's the timeline of everything.
And I'm assuming that the larger the company, the more intellectual property issues there are.
That's right. I think as the size of the company grows, they're probably developing more products. They have other issues. There's patent issues. I mean, small companies also have IP. They've got the name of their company. They may have a few core products. But as the company grows, they're going to have a lot more in their offerings and a lot more issues to think about with their company, not only protecting their own trademarks and copyrights and patents, but also making sure they're not infringing upon others, other properties that are owned by people around the world.
Well, do you think like the registering of domain names that has kind of helped with companies being able to protect their intellectual property because it's through their website, it's on their website?
Well, the mere registration of a domain name, just going out and getting a domain name, doesn't give you here in the United States trademark protection. You actually have to use it as a mark. For example, let's say Amazon.com. You know, you have to be known by that domain name in order to get the trademark in that. But having a website though is helpful in at least getting the word out and for if you have services, for example, in promoting your services and getting and spreading the word about what you can offer to the public.
Yeah.
It's another vehicle, just like a newspaper and magazine have been for many years. And the internet obviously wasn't invented yesterday, but we've got it around here and it's here to stay. And it certainly provides with respect to services and also for goods as well. Buying things, for example, if you're offering particular products on the web to buy them, you know, let's say you have a store, let's say on Etsy.com or other places, and you're selling your products, it opens up another avenue of getting your mark out there, mm-hmm. where in the past it may have just been limited to, let's say, a local penny saver or some sort of local bulletin to get the word out that you were selling something. Now it's really global in nature.
Yeah.
So the internet has played a major role in changing our landscape, changing our way in which people do business. And I love it. I mean, obviously, I kind of grew up with this whole thing. I mean, I started out, I mean, this will sort of date me, but I remember the Commodore PET and the Commodore 64 and the Timex Sinclair and the TRS-80. I think people who love computers are saying, oh, wow, yeah, that's going way back.
Yeah.
But that's what it was. And the Apple Lisa, for example, all these things are, you know, part of museums these days, but it's really where we all started.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad to have been born when I was born, because I'm part of this whole development. And now I'm obviously, through podcasting, you know, embracing the medium and enabling myself to use it to help others and to spread the word about IP.
Yeah. And what do you think business owners, startups, what do they miss the most in intellectual property? Or, like, when do you suggest an entrepreneur
entrepreneurs really from day one, when they're starting to think about names for certain products, they need to clear them early on and also file for them. We have a system here in the United States called intent to use, where you don't have to be using the mark per se, but you have to have a bona fide or good faith intent to use that mark on the product in interstate commerce. Okay. So it's really something you need to do early on, because if you don't, you may be thinking, I'm going to use this mark. And what happens if you start using it and you get a cease and desist letter? Then it's going to cost a lot of money to change the name and to rebrand and to re-educate the public as to, this is our product.
Yeah.
It really, in a large scheme of things, and if you look at all the things and the ROI and all of that, it is an investment you need to do early on, particularly with what you're going to call your company name, what you're going to call your products. Okay. We have a system also here in the United States, as in other countries, called common law trademarks. Whereas wherever you use the mark, you do develop rights. And technically you could, if you wanted to for enforcement, go into federal court and rely upon the common law rights that you've acquired through use of the mark. However, registration is very important. It's something you really need to consider doing. And even if you don't consider registration, at the very least, you've got to clear the mark. You've got to go and work with a trademark lawyer and make sure that the marks you're going to be using, okay, are available.
Yeah.
And you can use them in the fashion that you want to use them. And then you also have social media. I mean, we were talking about that also. I mean, we often have this parallel these days between the trademarks you're using and then the Instagram handle, the Facebook handle,
LinkedIn
and Periscope and broadcasting and Snapchat. And, you know, it just keeps growing and growing. The list keeps growing every year.
Yeah.
There's always something new. And that keeps us really, really busy, because there's all these issues that come out of it. People squatting on names and that type of thing. And, I enjoy it immensely, just being able to help clients, you know, reclaim their IP that may have fallen into the hands of others.
Yeah.
But it's a world that has rules, and we have systems.
Yeah.
And we have ways in which we go about helping our clients get protection and to enforce their rights as needed.
And how much should an entrepreneur put aside to invest in their...
I think it depends upon the company, what they want to do. But, you know, at the very minimum, several thousand dollars in the beginning to go and do a search and to talk with a lawyer and to develop an opinion and to figure out, you know, is this a mark that they can use or not?
And what are some tips that you would have for entrepreneurs when they're picking an attorney?
Well, I think you should, we have the internet. Everyone has the internet. So you should look up the lawyer that you're going to be working with. What kind of experience? How long have they been practicing for? Go onto the USPTO.gov here in the United States, the website, and look up under attorney, and you can see all the trademarks that they're filing and see their record and what, how many registrations have they obtained, and that type of thing. You can go to the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board website also and see if they're counseling clients and helping them on opposition and cancellation proceedings. So there's tools that everyone has access to at least do what we call due diligence. Mm-hmm. And you can read about, have they written articles? Have they published? Do they have speaking engagements? Are they members of professional associations? You know, there's all different ratings and honors that are bestowed by different periodicals and that type of thing. So there's all different ways that one could do their own check and figure out, you know, is this a lawyer that I want to work with? There's also the International Trademark Association, otherwise known as INTA, INTA.org, which has information on trademark lawyers and that type of thing.
Oh, terrific. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll put all those resources on our website.
Sure, that'd be great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what it's like starting up a podcast.
Yes.
It's like you're starting your own business,
yeah,
right?
That's right.
And so you're trying to be as frugal as possible.
That's right.
So are there free resources, or what do you think about the free resources available to entrepreneurs?
With respect to
intellectual property.
Well, I think,
and checking their,
I think that one should at the very minimum conduct what we call a preliminary search on your own. You can do that. Use the Google search engine, type in the names that you want to use and see what's out there. You know, read about products that might be using the mark, and then you'll know that's not a mark I'm going to use, yeah, want to use, because it's already taken. Mm-hmm. And similarly, with respect to trademarks that are pending or registered, you can go to uspto.gov. Okay. And then also in Canada and in other countries, there's free online databases that you can put the word in and essentially conduct for free your own search. And so you'll have a general idea of the marks that have been registered or not registered, and also common law marks. But really, the inquiry doesn't stop there. You still have to hire a trademark lawyer, because there's many uses that are not on the internet. It's hard to believe that, but yes, there's still uses that don't make it on the internet that may still rise to the level of a trademark and a service mark with respect to use. And so that's where having a trademark lawyer run a full search, who then has access to countless databases, you know, obviously for a fee,
yeah,
but you then get more intelligence, more information to formulate a opinion as to whether the mark is available or not in a particular country.
Do all attorneys have access to the same databases, or do, yes, firms, they do?
Well, most lawyers, everyone has that usually. I mean, most firms these days have an internet connection. So they all will go to either through their phones or through their own desktop computer. They will be able to access uspto.gov and other places. There's also proprietary databases offered by companies. There's numerous competing companies where you can have software that then, or cloud-based systems that are used to search marks and to offer a little bit more interaction and intelligence on marks. Mm. And so we use these systems for our clients to perform what we call preliminary searches or knockout searches. If the mark makes its way through that preliminary or knockout search, the inquiry doesn't stop there. Then we order what's called a full search. And the full search, then it costs more, but again, you've got to spend that money to get the intelligence and information to make a reasoned judgment as to whether you should or should not use a mark.
Yeah.
And this is what we do for our clients. We look at countless books of information.
Yeah.
You know, some of these reports are 500 pages large, mm, in length. And so, you know, we go through each page, we read everything, we figure out risks.
Yeah.
We figure out if further investigations are needed. Mm-hmm. There's something called an in-use search, where we work with an investigator to figure out whether marks are actually used or not. You know, you may have a trademark, you've registered it, but maybe you stopped using it. And yeah, maybe they've abandoned, you know, their whole plan to use that mark. Well, it may be that you need to reach out to that particular company, or sometimes file what's called a cancellation proceeding, mm-hmm, to clear that mark from the register to make way for new marks. So we have systems, you know, in place to get things done and to help our clients in achieving what they want to do. Mm-hmm. But it's through these databases and through investigators and through further due diligence and research that we're able to then give judgments, you know, we're able to give recommendations to our clients, you know, based upon our judgment of the situation.
Sure. Interesting. I once knew someone, an entrepreneur, who had developed this tennis shoe. There were just a couple manufacturers in the United States that would make these particular shoes. And he had different styles for them, but he spent all of his money on patents because he wanted to go global. Mm. When I met him, it was in a one bedroom apartment, and the other room that was the living room was filled with all these shoes that he was trying to get rid of.
Wow.
It's tennis shoes. You know, it was just a story that I'd not heard before. And I'm like, maybe somebody, you know, should have told him, you know, to get your shoes in the marketplace and sell some before you go to every country and get a patent.
You need to talk with your IP counsel early on. We're talking about trademarks, but patents are also very important. And you need, before you start selling and telling people about your product and your invention, it is imperative to meet with your patent counsel, because you may have what we call forfeited particular rights in getting a patent, not only in the United States, but in other countries as well.
I know, but in this particular situation, isn't that kind of, I just thought it was so odd that he didn't just get the shoe out there in the United States and then go national.
Well, you know, each circumstance is different, think, in that regard. But in any way you look at it, before you start spending money on making prototypes and sinking in money on international expansion, I think it's very important to meet with counsel and to think about whether you can or cannot get a patent or a trademark and that type of thing. IP is something that should be done sooner rather than later.
Sure.
It's the way I put it. It's something that I don't think you can put off. I think you really need to look at it at the get-go. You know, as soon as you have something created, it's important to do what we call due diligence.
Sure. Very, very good. All right. There is a lot to trademark law and practicing intellectual property.
Yes. Yeah. It's really a great field. I'm so glad that I fell into it, really, because in law school, I took what's called unfair trade practices, and I remember the professor bringing in a bottle into class. And I was so amazed by how he described how we can protect the shape of the bottle and the labels that were on the bottle. And it really resonated with me. It was like, wow, this is something that we go into stores all the time. We see things.
Yeah.
I had an interest in communications law. I had an interest in entertainment law. And it all kind of came together.
Oh.
And so that was the thing. Now, I also had an interest in labor and employment law. Okay. And I worked for the American Arbitration Association. I worked for a professor, law professor, on employment discrimination and labor union issues. But I decided at the time, I got into two LLM programs. One was NYU School of Law's LLM program in trade regulation, where I focused on trademarks and copyrights. The other was Georgetown's labor law LLM. And I decided to go the IP route. That was a sort of a pivotal decision that I made at that time. And it really was the courses that I had at Albany Law School and Union University, in particular Professor Michael Hutter, who I just loved. It ignited that interest that was sort of there, but it developed beyond that.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't that funny how that kind of came together?
It was there. It was like having that guy. He came in with these bottles. I'm like, wow, this is really cool and interesting. And, you know, and then there was other courses. And then at NYU, they had some great professors there too who are adjuncts, let us say, where they, you know, they're working in law firms all day long. But then at night, they came in to teach courses. And I found that to be really, really helpful in hearing the war stories and the challenges that they faced, and also some of the practical tips and things that they could offer young law students who were just starting out in their careers.
Yeah.
I might do something like that in the future myself. I mean, I like teaching and that type of thing.
Yeah.
It's something that maybe in the future I will do.
Well, and that's part of the, maybe that's a second podcast program that you start, or you use the podcast as a tool for education.
Yes. And I know, like, just in general, you know, I know that people use Skype and other programs to tutor and to help people.
Yeah.
I think that's a wonderful thing for connecting people, you know, who might not be in your backyard, but through communications are able to connect.
Yeah, right. Exactly. We know from our last session with you that you had moved your transplant from New York.
Yes.
To Minnesota.
Right. Started in New York City and then the Buffalo and now here in Midwest.
Okay. And where did you meet Kelly?
Well, we go back to the internet again. We met. Yeah, we met online.
Okay. Through a dating service?
Yeah, okay. Through a dating service, Match.com. And, you know, it's just been really... for me, the internet has just played a major role in almost everything I do.
Yeah.
From shopping to everything. So I think it's just, that's how we met. But it really took, obviously, getting to know one another. I took a plane out from Buffalo to Twin Cities and met Kelly. And then she ended up moving to Buffalo and we lived together for a number of years. Mm. And then we moved back here. We have two children now.
Okay. Oh. That's a good story. Mm-hmm. Well, and so once you got here, did you find Barnes and Thornburg or what, how did you, how did
through,
that work
through
out?
Through a connection that I had from my second law firm, I was able to meet Barnes and Thornburg and then I was hired prior to my arrival here.
Okay. Well, and they have a women's leadership program.
Yes, they do. Yeah,
that I've been a part of. Yeah.
It's a great program. Really brings together great thought leaders and people on a common topic, and it's well received.
Yeah, it's been growing every year.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. All right. Well, is there any other suggestions you would have that we haven't already covered, or any last thoughts before we kind of close out today?
I definitely think that IP is a very important part of every business, whether it's a small business or a business that's been around for many years. And, you know, you really need to take stock of your IP from on sort of like a year-to-year basis, because you may have trademarks that you're no longer using, that you don't need to pay renewal fees anymore for because you're not using them. It's sort of like taking inventory. Mm-hmm. You always have to think about, what are my new projects? What are my new things? Meet with counsel, figure out ways to proactively protect your IP rather than being reactive on everything. I think it's important to have, you know, these things looked at, make the filings, prioritize the countries, let's say, that you're going to be selling in. I remember in my old job back in Buffalo, you know, I used to work on with one particular client, and he liked to have what's called core countries. Which are the countries that I'm selling in the most? Where do I really need to line up my protection? You know, and that's very important. I mean, because
that's a good way to think about it too.
Yeah, there's so many systems out there throughout the country, throughout the world. You just won't have enough money to protect in everywhere unless you're a huge company. But for a growing company, you really need to think about, where am I selling in the next number of years, and create basically a plan. And also to look to, for example, in certain countries, they have a first to use versus a first to file. And there may be countries, for example, in Asia, where you really need to get your trademarks on file as soon as possible, because if you don't, you may forfeit your rights because someone else has filed before you.
I see.
That's different than in the United States, where the law looks to who uses the mark first. And then that is looked at as who has the priority in the particular trademark.
So kind of a common law approach.
Right, common law approach versus a system where the rights are accorded via who files first. Mm. So there's a lot of levels of inquiry and thought that need to go into everything. And I think by working with a trademark lawyer or a patent lawyer, that is really good to do early on. Even though it may be something you may not have everything all ready to go,
yeah,
it's good to have at least preliminary talks and to talk about the plan of how you want to go out and protect and enforce your IP as you develop your business.
Yeah, that's such good advice. Yeah, I think that's an underutilized area where entrepreneurs, when they're doing business planning, they're not putting a lot of money in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we will take that seriously.
Very good.
Okay. I can't let you go without asking you, are there some leadership areas that you're working on for yourself?
Well, you know, from leadership, I'm currently, obviously, I work every day and I'm working with my family and I have two little girls. You know, I'm trying to be a role model there, you know, for
nice.
Them and teaching them. And I think leadership begins at the family level and how you work with your children. And so for me, that's really what most of my hours are spent with, whether it be work and family. But I think in the future, you know, back in Buffalo, New York, I was on the board of directors of the Buffalo Arts Studio. And I might try to get involved with something similar here in the Twin Cities in the future.
Nice. I like the way you described your leadership starts at home.
Yes.
Yeah. Excellent. Wonderful way to end our session. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Nancy.
Thanks, Mike Cabea, our sound engineer and photographer. And we'll see all of you next Monday. Thanks for tuning in.